Not only did Pachacuti reconfigure the capital, he laid out the institutions that characterized Tahuantinsuyo itself. For centuries, villagers had spent part of their time working in teams on community projects. Alternately bullying and cajoling, Pachacuti expanded the service obligation unrecognizably. In Tahuantinsuyo, he decreed, all land and property belonged to the state, indeed, to the Inca himself. Peasants thus had to work periodically for the empire as farmers, herders, weavers, masons, artisans, miners, or soldiers. Often, crews spent months away from home. While they were on the road, the state fed, clothed, and housed them, all from goods supplied by other work crews. Conscripts built dams, terraces, and irrigation canals. They grew crops on state land and raised herds on state pastures and made pots in state factories and stocked hundreds of state warehouses. They paved the highways and supplied the runners and lamas carrying messages and goods along them. Dictatorially extending Andean verticality, the Imperium shuttled people and materiel in and out of every Andean crevice. Not the least surprising feature of this economic system was that it functioned without money. True, the lack of currency did not surprise the Spanish invaders. Much of Europe did without money until the 18th century. But the Inca did not even have markets. Economists would predict that this non-market economy, vertical socialism it has been called, should produce gross inefficiencies. These surely occurred, but the errors were of surplus, not want. The Spanish invaders were stunned to find warehouses overflowing with cloth and supplies that never got used. But to the Inca, the brimming coffers signified prestige and plenty. It was all part of the plan. Most important, Tahuantinsuyo managed to eradicate hunger, the Peruvian novelist Mario Vargas Llosa noted. Though no fan of the Inca, he conceded that only a very small number of empires throughout the whole world have succeeded in achieving this feat. When Tahuantinsuyo swallowed a new area, the Inca forcibly imported settlers from other faraway areas, often in large numbers, and gave them land. The newcomers were encouraged to keep their own dress and customs rather than integrate into the host population. To communicate, both groups were forced to use Runasimi, the language of their conquerors. In the short run, this practice created political tensions that the Inca manipulated to control both groups. In the long term, it would have, if successful, eroded the distinctions among cultures and forced a homogeneous new nation in the imprint of Tahuantinsuyo. 5 centuries later, the wholesale reshuffling of populations became an infamous trademark of Stalin and Mao. But the scale on which the Inca moved the pieces around the ethnic checkerboard would have excited their admiration. Incredibly, foreigners came to outnumber natives in many places. It is possible that ethnic clashes would eventually have caused Tahuantinsuyo to implode, Yugoslavia style. But if Pizarro had not interrupted, the Inca might have created a monolithic culture as enduring as China.